Now, Lori Mercier talks with Martin Hart Landsberg, Lewis and Clark College Professor Emeritus and board member of the Korea Policy Institute. The Korea Policy Institute is an independent research and educational institute whose mission is to provide timely analysis of United States policies toward Korea and the developments on the Korean Peninsula. What's the meaning of the recent Trump-Kim Jong-un summit? Hart Landsberg discusses what the mainstream liberal media has missed, how right-wing attacks do not further peace on the peninsula, and how ending war games and improving relations are essential for promoting peace in the region.
Thanks, Tom. Martin Hart Landsberg is Professor Emeritus of Economics at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, and the author and editor of many publications, including the blog Reports from the Economic Front, and a number of books about Korea, including Marxist Perspectives on South Korea and the Global Economy, and Korea, Division, Reunification, and U.S. Foreign Policy. As Tom said, he's a member of the Steering Committee of the Alliance of Scholars Concerned About Korea and a board member of the Korea Policy Institute. Thanks for coming back to the Old Mole, Marty.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you.
We talked about a year ago before the South Korean elections and when President Trump was more belligerent towards North Korea, echoing a long history of U.S. behavior there. But the recent summit with Kim Jong-un represents a breakthrough, doesn't it? What's the meaning of the Singapore summit?
Well, yes, the change has been almost head-spinning. As you pointed out, I think the June 12th summit in Singapore between the U.S. and North Korea was an incredibly important and positive step towards, I guess, three interrelated goals. One is the achievement of peace on the Korean Peninsula. The second is normalized relations between the U.S. and North Korea. And the third is movement towards the actual reunification of Korea. Now, I want to emphasize the word step. The summit moves us in the right direction from, as you were talking, you know, what we were really facing was the danger of a new war, a new Korean war. So the summit moves it in the right direction. There are many steps that need to happen. But the fact that we're talking about peace, and in fact that there's been concrete steps towards peace and a de-escalation of war dangers, is very important. I've been sort of struck by how many people, including people who view themselves left of center, have dismissed this summit as meaningless or, in fact, even as negative. But if I can just take a moment to list some of the concrete things.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like the media, and liberal media specifically, has been shockingly bellicose. And I've noticed has excluded Korean voices. And despite the Western media's claims, hasn't South Korean President Moon Jae-in really welcomed the results of the summit?
Very much so. In fact, about the polling show, about 83% of South Koreans are in support of President Moon's policies to promote reconciliation with the North and the U.S.-North Korean summits. And what's interesting is the day after the U.S.-North Korean summit, his Democratic Party won 11 of 12 by-elections for the national parliament and 14 of 17 mayoral and gubernatorial races. People are just incredibly positive about these developments. And I think that people in this country don't realize what the cost, just leaving aside North Korea and the U.S. from all these tensions, in South Korea, past right-wing governments have used the state of war and tensions to apply the national security law to outlaw a progressive political party, to actually dissolve several trade unions, to arrest trade union leaders, to break strikes, to restrict freedom of speech. And then there's the question of all the massive U.S. military bases in South Korea, the environmental, the social damages, and the threat of war. People in South Korea are just very positive about steps that will end this tension of war and create possibilities for democratic change in South Korea.
And it seems like another critique of the mainstream media has been that this agreement does nothing to verify denuclearization on the part of North Korea without mentioning at all U.S. military provocations on the peninsula.
Yes. I mean, let's just take a look at what the actual summit has produced both before, during, and after. Kim Jong-un, before the summit, announced that they were halting all missile and nuclear weapons testing. At the summit, he committed again to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which from the north side means no more production and actual maintenance of a nuclear weapons program. Of course, we'll come back to the U.S. side. He also agreed to destroy the main missile engine testing facility after already destroying North Korea's nuclear bomb testing facility. And he agreed to allow a return of U.S. military personnel to search for and repatriate the remains of U.S. soldiers killed during the Korean War. The U.S. side, President Trump, pledged to end these war games, which he correctly said were provocative. They happen several times a year. They include massive military maneuvers involving tens of thousands of troops, simulated nuclear attacks on North Korea, and they practice the decapitation of North Korea's leadership. And what's so amazing is that not only are there these, you know, ending these war games and the reduction of testing very important steps, but North and South Korea have been meeting since their own summit and are following up with the first meeting between the militaries of North and South Korea in 10 years. They're restoring military communication lines. They're talking about de-escalating the militaries around the DMZ. So they're very, very real important developments. And the media speaks of this as somehow the U.S. has the right to continue to threaten other countries with nuclear attack, with massive war games. And what's so amazing is that when they ask the North Koreans to get rid of all their nuclear weapons, all the North Koreans are asking for is that the U.S. not bring nuclear-equipped planes or submarines or weapons themselves into the Korean Peninsula. They're not even asking that the U.S. stop its own nuclear testing program. We're continuing that. Or that it stops its missile testing. We continue to do that. So the idea that somehow the North Koreans are taking advantage of us or that this isn't a real step towards peace is hard to understand.
Yeah, it was even amazing that Trump mentioned that most of the damage from the Korean War was in North Korea. Pretty amazing concession to actual history that we haven't heard any former presidential administration mention.
Yes. I mean, the estimates vary, but anywhere from 20 to 30% of the North Korean population was killed during the Korean War. Almost every city was leveled by bombing, massive bombing, also the use of napalm. And what also is part of that history, which it is amazing that President Trump brought this into the public record, is the fact that the U.S. threatened to drop nuclear bombs on Korea during the Korean War. They introduced nuclear weapons into the Korean Peninsula in 1958 against the armistice agreement and have conducted war games, which included simulated nuclear attacks on North Korea beginning in the late 70s and through the 80s and on, long before North Korea ever was trying to develop nuclear weapons. So the notion that North Korea is somehow this aggressive state moving towards nuclear programs in an unprovoked manner is just not historically right. The North Koreans began to develop their programs in the 90s after the end of the Soviet Union when the U.S. continued to threaten them. When the Soviet Union ended, North Korea no longer had a nuclear protector. And the U.S. became ever more aggressive, which led to the North Koreans to try and develop a nuclear weapons program, which they have repeatedly offered to give up if the U.S. would end its military threats and embargoes against the North.
Well, what should people do? I mean, in light of the fact that, I mean, sadly, Democratic Party politicians have been introducing measures to try to insist on the continuation of war games, et cetera. I mean, it seems like the Democratic Party is becoming the war party or
yes.
Trying to out-hawk Trump. So how should people, in moving forward, try to pressure Democratic Party politicians and also help assist this movement towards peace?
Well, if people would like a little education background, I appreciate the mention of the Korea Policy Institute. But if they go on the webpage of the Korea Policy Institute, they will see on the front page a link towards a reader, which is can be freely downloaded, which will provide some historical background to U.S. policy towards Korea. But most importantly, I think people need to have confidence in their own reading of what's going on. ending the war games are good. Promoting ties, normalization of relations between countries is good. It's good for people in North Korea. It's good for people in South Korea. It works against militarism in Japan. And it even begins to raise questions about why we need to be spending so much on our military here in the United States. So I think people need to have confidence, and the polls show that the majority of people want direct ties and direct contacts between U.S. and North Korea and support this kind of summit. So people need to have the confidence, and they need to speak out and write their legislators, but also speak in their communities and continue to put pressure on Congress and on Trump, because just as quickly as Trump, you know, has embraced this summit, we know that he can change his mind. But there's a moment now that's opened up where people have a sense of possibilities, and I think we need to seize them, speaking out, writing, challenging around positions of principles, around positions of peace.
Well, the Korean Public Service and Transport Workers Union have been really praising this agreement, but also noting that Trump's emphasis on economic development also perhaps bodes some warnings about the motivations of Trump for economic development there on the China and Vietnam model. And then I suppose that's another area in which people should lobby against that kind of economic development and overtures towards really capitalist globalization, including North Korea now.
Sure. I mean, I don't think any of us should have confidence that Trump's vision of what a new world or a North Korean economy would look like. But to the extent that the tensions of war recede, it makes possible connections across the border between North and South Korean workers and teachers and environmentalists and women's movements. And what's going to have to happen in Korea, and I think the unions in South Korea are very clear about this, that what they want is a process of reunification that allows for people to begin to shape what would a democratic education look like for a new Korea? What would labor laws look like? What would an environmentally responsive and responsible economic strategy look like? And I think that if the U.S. can be encouraged and pressured to actually make peace between the U.S. and North Korea, it means it opens up the possibility for people in South Korea to engage with people in North Korea and begin this process of discussion. One of the things that in the early 90s, I traveled to North Korea representing the American Friends Service Committee and was able to make contacts and help to create conversations between South Korean and North Korean teachers about educational philosophy and how to understand World War II and the division of Korea through meetings in China, for example. So there's a lot of ways in which people in the South and in the North can begin to chart their own vision, which if the U.S. continues to threaten war games, continues to create a feeling of national emergency, we all know what happens under those conditions. Governments crack down. North Korean government cracks down. South Korean government cracks down. The U.S., Japan, China. So anything that begins to pull away from these kinds of threats creates opportunities which are more likely to be seized in good ways by South Korean working people and North Korean working people to chart a vision that's not going to be the one that Trump may want to push.
And the fact that progressives just won overwhelmingly in these recent elections that you've just told us about, Marty, is a positive sign representing what happens with peace.
Yes. The current president in South Korea came to power when the previous president was impeached based on a massive multi-million numbers of people were out in the streets. But when he became president, he inherited the old National Assembly, which was dominated by the right.
Marty, so we have to conclude now, but thank you so much, Martin Hart Landsberg, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
To keep the world alive and war to cease. We gotta have joy, true in our hearts, but strength we can't destroy. People hear us, the bacon, save the children.